This is an Enterprise Times podcast. I'm Steve Brooks. I'm here with Kerim Akgonul, SVP of Products at Pegasystems. Kerim, hello.
Hi, Steve. Great to be here.
Today, you announced low-code factory. Can you tell me a little bit about it, please?
We announced a low-code factory as we've seen a tremendous amount of interest from our customer, from our client base, to actually be able to enable more and more individuals in their organizations to actually participate in developing applications and solutions. And we wanted to have a solution that can help them get there rapidly.
But it's more than just a tool, isn't it, the low-code factory?
It is absolutely more than just software, Steve. We believe that the organizations would heavily benefit from best practices, from training, from guardrails, and a clear understanding of the approach that would allow the IT organizations within these enterprises to be able to provide a service to business to let them build applications on the Pega Infinity solution.
We're here at PegaWorld, and I've heard a lot about guardrails. Can you explain exactly what they are?
Guardrails are essentially our capabilities that is in the Pega product to be able to give warnings and be able to give feedback to people who are building and configuring applications, letting them know that their configuration is not within the definition of best practices. This gives the opportunity to the organizations to evaluate configuration components that have these warnings, and there are different levels of warnings, and be able to correct them, be able to justify them and explain why they're doing it, or give them recommendations on what other capabilities to use in order to reach essentially the use cases that they're trying to achieve. And overall, it ultimately calculates a score for the application that basically tells us how guardrail compliant an application is. The higher the guardrail number, it essentially goes from 0 to 100, the more guardrail compliant it is.
And that compliance, is that around in terms of the upgradability?
It does. The upgradability comes in play. The long-term maintenance of it comes in play. The ease of actually changing and evolving the application comes in play. But it's mostly around the system continuously providing feedback on use of best practices so that the application is easy, like you said, easy to upgrade, easy to maintain, easy to evolve so that we can make it future-proof.
Does that number change over time or over different upgrades?
It does. It doesn't change over time, but it does change over upgrades as we basically evolve the capabilities of the Pega Infinity product and come up with new best practices. Some things that basically were within the guardrails become in the next versions are not within the guardrails, and we provide essentially guidance of what those elements are.
We've got the guardrails and that compliance element in the low-code factory, and then we have the education piece, I believe, as well. What's made up within education?
A couple of different elements. One, there's the education of essentially the product capabilities that are targeted towards citizen developers and the core capabilities around case definitions, case life cycles, process automation, business rules, approvals, service level agreements, prioritization, routing, all the core elements of the Pega Infinity product that is very much around the business expectations and the business use cases and the business needs. And then there's also education components around how to set up a low-code factory within the enterprise and being able to give guidance to the organizations as to where do you define the line between where the IT takes ownership and which components, and what are the components that are exposed to citizen developers to take advantage of.
So this isn't about replacing the IT development function. Where is that line, and what does IT do, and what does the citizen developer do?
It is absolutely not about replacing the IT organization. This is really be able to provide a solution to the IT organization so that they can better serve their customers. And as I said, it's a service for IT to be able to deliver to their customers, to their business customers. You ask, what are the ownerships of the IT? The infrastructure, the environment, the monitoring of the systems, the security, authentication, authorization in some cases, the encryption, the databases that are used. Those are the core components that are very much within basically IT. There's also another layer of functionality that's a lot around data models and essentially shared object models across the applications within an organization. So think like, what's a customer? What's a policy? What's an account? What's a portfolio? What's a product? All these basically core objects that can be defined centrally within the layer of the factory, then be made available across the different applications, as well as how do these elements actually going to integrate with existing systems within the IT infrastructure and being able to deliver and establish that connectivity. A business application, a business citizen developer, can reference a customer ID, and the Pega Infinity would automatically figure out what's the best way to actually retrieve that customer data and make it available to that process. And we believe that connectivity is very much on the IT side.
You're talking about the metadata almost, so the citizen developer is not going to know the specific SAP field name, but they'll know it's the customer ID because that's what they understand in the business language.
Exactly, and they wouldn't necessarily configure any IDOC space integration to the SAP system. That will be done on the IT side. They'll just know that there is a customer object, and the customer object has already been published, and they know that they can just use it and reference it and display it and work on it as they see fit for their business use cases.
Is there not a risk that we go back to probably the 70s or 80s when we had a huge number of report writing systems out there and users were given those report writers to create their own reports, that we just get a lot of duplication of effort, a lot of low-code apps that people have replicated across the whole business and do the same thing again and again?
We actually see a little bit of that problem as different business departments and divisions go and select some random low-code tool, some random SaaS application, some random robot to do task automation. And there's such an incredible number of these little technical solutions out there. The idea with the IT factory is really the exact opposite, which is you establish a standard for an enterprise. You basically say, this is how we build these applications. This is how people get authenticated. This is how people are no longer have access once they are no longer with the organization. This is how we're going to store and encrypt the data. And this is essentially the established platform, and the businesses get a chance to leverage it, but with a clear visibility with the IT organization and also across the different divisions so that you can actually have a chance of avoiding duplication. But instead, get an environment that lets you actually reuse the assets that different applications have developed.
I was going to say the counter argument to that, you mentioned the reuse case. Does that include a personalization of apps? Because taking one of the most common apps we heard earlier is in terms of the startup for a call center person who wants to go in, they have to log on to 8 different systems. And that's great, and that will save a lot of time across the whole call center. But individuals within that call center may have personal preferences for working, where they may have a certain element on a screen which is in a different location to somebody else. So can you personalize some of those things?
Absolutely. One of the things actually we're showcasing with Pega Infinity here in this conference is having our UI layer to be able to give the personalization and be able to persisting of the personalized options for the users. And we're also building some new capabilities when the application changes that is in conflict of what has been personalized, that they'll be able to get a visual clue that shows them some of the elements that they have personalized, the foundational elements have changed. So imagine we have a table, and you basically, in the table, basically out of the application comes with 10 columns, and you essentially decide that you don't want to see 3 of them, so you hide them. So you're only seeing 7 columns. When in the next iteration, there's 2 other additional columns that are now made available on that core application layer table, the system will let you still see your personalized view, but it will also give you an indication that new additional columns are made available.
You mentioned on stage that although it's being launched in the second half of this year, or going GA second half of this year, you've got some customers already using the system. What are the real benefits they've seen, and what are the use cases they've done?
The benefits have been a lot around consolidating a spectacular number of just random applications that popped up in different parts of the organization where data was duplicated. In some cases, the applications had stale data in it. The security requirements were not complied with. What happens in a lot of cases really is these initiatives blossom, very exciting at first. They get to have some real complexity in them, and then the business unit will call on the IT and say, you need to take this over because we cannot manage this. So the main benefits have been that the IT basically still can make sure that the organization complies with all the security rules and all the standards that they have, and still provide that service and still provide that flexibility to their business.
But are you talking about the IT or the citizens having to recreate those applications?
In many cases, they basically take those applications that are built on some random technology and re-implemented them in Pega Infinity and put a case lifecycle on it, defined a data model, and brought it to the users on the standard platform.
Can you give some examples of that?
A lot of approvals, a lot of basically information requests, a lot of objects that require multiple people to collaborate, a lot of documents management applications. It's mostly around somebody basically has a request, and the request needs to get routed to someone. They need to gather some data from an external system, get somebody else to verify it, and it gets resolved, and a notification is sent to a person that requested it.
One of the thoughts I had earlier today, and we talked about micro journeys, or there's a lot of talk around micro journeys, which are improving efficiencies within operations within larger organizations, rather than looking at large journeys and trying to bite off too much almost in one go. You still need to look at the objective, obviously. If an organization takes on some of those improvements and those automations and increases the efficiency, they therefore have reduced the value of maybe doing larger transformation projects down the road. Is that a risk within doing automation RPA?
I don't think that's a risk. Being able to essentially identify the core pain points of the end customers and what are they basically coming in asking, and being able to solve the outcomes of the problems, not the individual essentially, I'm just going to put a bot in here so that we can automate the entry into this backend system. That's great, but that's a band-aid. But to understand basically a journey that affects the customer and to be able to figure out what is the best way that I'm going to service the customer for this. A lot of the organizations know the primary use cases for the requests that are coming from the customers. They're coming in, they're doing billing inquiries, they're going to change an address, they're going to check on the status of a claim, they want to know when the payment's going to post. They have a crystal clear understanding of what is it that customers are coming in and requesting from us. And to be able to understand it and understand basically how from different channels, different ways that they're going to come in and be able to provide an awesome experience is, I think, going to go over really well.
You could argue that they're not always using design thinking to look at the process holistically, though. They are just putting the band-aid, maybe down fixing the customer's problem, and I take that on board. But it's not necessarily looking at the whole business model around that and saying, actually, do we need to rethink at a wider scale?
A lot of times, the design thinking approach that we come up with also asks the question as to why is the customer calling? So before you actually just focus on, well, they're constantly calling in and checking on the status of this, let's automate it, to be able to understand, well, why is the customer calling? And is it because there's basically, it takes 7 days to actually post their payment? Maybe we can reduce that to one. Is it because this is taking these many iterations? Can we reduce the customer's engagement to do it? Or, you know what, why don't we just basically proactively engage with the customer and give them the information that they need, give them the update that they're looking for prior to they even come in and seeking for the information. Our design thinking approach looks at it from that perspective.
The step beyond proactive is preemptive, isn't it? Can we talk about that a little bit?
There's preemptive and there's proactive. When you're engaged with the customer, you have the opportunity to be able to make a recommendation to them or make a suggestion that will make it easier. And then there is the idea that you know that something's going to happen. So before there's actually an invocation of a request, be able to actually calculate the needs of the customers and approach them prior to them actually instantiating an engagement.
Coming back to low-code factory, what's the interest in low-code factory from the customer base and outside the customer base at the moment?
We've started with several engagements with a series of our clients that are very international organizations where they approached us to have to use the Pega Infinity product as their low-code factory and be able to eliminate hundreds of ad hoc processes and ad hoc applications. And that's how the initiative started. Initially worked on three major projects in eliminating a few hundred such implementations and be able to provide a standardized solution, which is what evolved us into much more of a productized approach to this. And that's how we came up with the initiative.
Okay, thank you very much.
Steve, thank you. Pleasure.